You are now listening to the All Gas and No Brakes Radio Show on IndyShine 90.9 from Indianapolis, the city of motorsports. Good morning, race fans, and welcome back to the All Gas No Brakes Radio Show. I'm your host, Landon Nelson, a.k.a. Big Nelly. Alongside me, as always, the biggest Purdue fan I know, the one and only Garrett Burkle. What up, Garrett?
Nothing much. I'm very excited because IndyCar was back this weekend. So I actually had a double TV set up on the big TV in my living room. I had the Boilermakers on, Purdue Boilermakers, and on the smaller TV, I had some IndyCar on. So was muting back and forth between the two of them when one went on a commercial, threw it on mute.
It's like a true Buffalo Wild Wings experience.
It is what it is, man. But yeah, it was actually a really good race. We'll dive into that pretty soon.
Last but not least, I am joined by Owen Pauly. How are you doing today, Owen?
I'm doing pretty good. Not super happy that Verstappen got another win at Bahrain for Formula One, but, you know, I'm doing pretty good.
And the one and only Maxwell Gilley, the biggest Jeff Gordon fan I know, will be joining us later in the episode. He's working on stuff for the ISAB Awards.
IASB. And he got nominated for the live air on-air personality, so he's got to do a live event, and he's queuing up his music
right
now.
Let's give a round of applause for Maxwell Gilley.
There you go, Max.
So basically, he'll go against, I believe, five other contestants, and they'll do basically like a live drop-in. So, you know, when you're listening to Indy's Giant 90.9, and you'll hear either Max or Landon or Ryan or really any of us come in, and we're like, that was this song, here's this song. That's basically what Max is going to do.
Sweet.
Yes, sir. It's going to be amazing. Well, Garrett, let's dive into your IndyCar news. Take it away, Garrett.
Well, first, they were at the streets of St. Petersburg
this
weekend.
What a great race. It was a fantastic race.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's the most historic road course on the schedule. It's probably second to the Indianapolis 500 on the schedule for what the drivers want to win. So it was a really good race, and I'll go over the finishing order from last to first. So we'll start off here. So first lap, there was an airborne incident with the number 55 car of Benjamin Peterson. He got airborne on the first lap of the race.
And I do want to talk about that, Garrett. I do want to talk about that incident we had. We had a discussion here at WBDG with Devlin DeFrancesco, ended up going airborne.
Was it DeFrancesco? Okay.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, you're right.
And we saw that, over here that Peterson was just barreling through that corner and just absolutely rammed into the back of DeFrancesco and sent him airborne. How does nobody in the pit wall tell him, like,
the spotter doesn't tell him.
And the spotter, like, had to be, like, a miscommunication.
First lap, I guess.
I mean, they're all pushing really hard. I mean, Rosenquist kind of, like, I don't even know what happens to him. I think he just, does he, like, hit the wall, or is he just, his car just, like.
He tried to pass, I think it was someone.
No, he got pushed by Dixon into the wall, yeah.
Was that right?
Yeah,
he and got then from Dixon. There, he kept falling back, and then he was the slower car, and then.
It was, like, it was just a mess behind them, scrapping for position. And it was, like, it was out of the. It was after turn one and going to turn two and going down the straightaway to hit to turn three and through that windy straightaway, and then just chaos broke.
Yeah, it was definitely very interesting. We had a couple of airborne crashes on the day. There's another airborne crash. I cannot remember who it is off the top of my head.
I got you, dog.
Who was it?
So we're going to talk about that first crash. The notable drivers are in the first incident. You had Elio Castroneves, and you also had Simon Pagenaud. Both Meyer Shank cars out of the race, which that's not great for Meyer Shank. And then you had Stingray Robb involved, Devlin DeFrancesco, and then you also had Santino Ferrucci, and you had the Peterson involved as well, which I don't even know how you just, like, T-boned. He literally T-boned DeFrancesco. That was a scary accident. And then that was just extremely chaotic. That was just after the incident with Felix Rosenquist and Scott Dixon out of turn two. And then on the restart of lap 41, they had Rinus VK. He went into the barriers in turn four. And then Jack Harvey had nowhere to go, and then he just plowed right into VK. And then Kyle Kirkwood, he had a fantastic car for Andretti. He was flying. I mean, he was in the top five all day. And then he hit the rear of Harvey's car and went airborne. And then it was a crazy accident. And then Harvey was like gassed. Like, I mean, he had to like go to the, like, he had to go to the safety team. Like, he was out of that car, like, looking really, not hurt necessarily, but definitely like exhaustion for sure. I mean, you are in Florida and it is pretty hot. I mean, it is the spring.
That's true.
And then another incident. What were you guys' thoughts on Roman Grosjean and Scott McLaughlin when McLaughlin came out of the pits and then they're battling for position on track? It was towards the later part of the race, but not specific what lap it was, but what are your thoughts on...
So it was coming out of the pits for the final pit stop, and McLaughlin barely beat Grosjean, like, barely, and then held him off going in to one of the turns. And there was, it's just hard racing at the end of the day, that's what I think. I don't think... Again, I think if I was in that position, I'd do the same thing. I feel like a lot of drivers would do the same thing. And, I mean, Grosjean and McLaughlin are cool about it. Like, there's no, you know, tension there. You know, it sucks for both of them. But at the same time, you know, they're both racing for the win. Should they have been racing that hard on that lap? I don't think so. And Grosjean should have waited, in all honesty. I think he went way too hard there. So I don't know. I would put the blame more towards McLaughlin if I had to. But at the same time, like, Grosjean should have been smart enough to wait. So, I don't know. I think it's both their faults, honestly.
I think with that, it was just a matter of bad timing. I think that McLaughlin pulled out in front. I mean, obviously, he pulled out in front of Grosjean, just leading the pits. I think that also it's tough because it's immediately into a right-hander. Mm-hmm. So, if you're coming out of the pits, that means you almost automatically, unless you make a move, you automatically have to take the inside line, which just didn't happen. Or he did.
Yeah.
He took about the most inside line you can. They touched the curb. Yeah.
Because the access road out of the pits, you're going to, you're all, you, so you have Grosjean speeding past the start finish line at turn one and two. He barely beats him coming out of turn two, and he's on the straightaway. They're going to turn three. They make it through there.
That's what I meant, turn
and
three.
And then they come down that straightaway, and then you have that, McLaughlin's trying to warm up his tires. He's trying to, protect the inside line. He's going to make Grosjean probably go around the outside because that's the, you know, the defensive line around that track. And then, you know, you're going into turn four and five, and he's trying to hold him off, trying to warm up those tires. And then Grosjean really tries to overdrive the corner around the outside. And then McLaughlin's trying to, you know, protect the inside line, not let him, you know, get around him. And then he just gets loose, and his tires are just extremely cold. It slides right up into Grosjean, and they both hit the barriers.
That part is tough because of the tire area. Like, the barrier is the tires that come out of the wall, which is tough because it's a tight turn, and you just got to be able to make that. And it was tough going too wide, especially. I mean, too wide you can go, but it just is tough when McLaughlin slides into Grosjean, sending him into the wall. Right. And then McLaughlin ended up hitting the wall.
If I'm Grosjean, I'm waiting. I mean, you got to pull out of that. You have, your tires are the most warm. You're probably going to pass him on the straightaway coming back to the start finish line. You're going to have push to pass.
He's not smart enough to wait, though. So that's just what it boils down to. Because, I mean, he's done this. This isn't his first time, you know, wrecking someone. Or
somebody commented, like, there's a bunch of comments on IndyCar's post that they're saying, like, Roman Grosjean got in a crash and it wasn't his fault. It's like very rare.
It is rare, and I mean, but still, bottom line is he got in a crash. So I think Grosjean's a good driver. He's very talented, but again, you just got to be smart enough in that moment just to wait. And again, I get you're racing for the, you know, that's the race right there, because if McLaughlin gained too much ground, it's over. But at the same time, like, you know, you were probably going to pass him anyway. Just wait, man. Like, it is what it is. And if I'm in that situation, I'm probably doing the same thing Grosjean did. I'm probably trying to pass him there because, again, you don't know how, you know, you don't know if McLaughlin's car, you know, hits a new gear and flies away from the field. We just don't know that.
Grosjean and him were the class of the field that whole day.
Correct.
I mean, McLaughlin was on a different strategy. I mean, he started further back in the field compared to Grosjean.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he was on a different strategy. You know, I mean, his race engineer, I don't know the race engineer. They said it on NBC, but I'm not 100% sure who the race engineer was. But he was, like, one of the best. He's, like, known worldwide for great strategy calls. He's been with Team Penske for years. But he got him out front. I mean, it was just one of those, you know, racing incidents, and it was unfortunate because I'm a Team Penske fan. I'm a big McLaughlin fan. He's a class act. I mean, the Kiwi, New Zealand. You know what I'm saying? So, he's a good dude, and I really respect him.
Yeah, for sure. Was it Tim Senrick is his?
No, I think that is Senrick. He's with Joseph Newgard.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure who his engineer is either.
Well, after all that chaos with the two leaders, Grosjean and McLaughlin, Pato O'Ward resumes the lead. And he was flying away from Ericsson for a while. He was flying away. And then he was flying away, like I said. And then, you know, he was at one point, O'Ward was, you know, was leading by a couple seconds. He built up a 2.8 second lead on lap 79. And then, you know, Ericsson's just steadily chipped at, you know, O'Ward's gap. And then, you know, I mean, Ericsson was pushing the push to pass. He was really pushing the push to pass. But you don't know what push to pass is. It's like, you know, it's not like DRS in Formula One. It's like, you know, you have DRS in Formula One where it's like, you know, you're within a second. You get that couple mile an hour, you know, extra boost of pace and try to pass the person. This is like IndyCar drivers have this right away, and they can just steadily use it throughout the race. And you gain a couple miles per hour each time you use it. So it's kind of like DRS, just you conserve and try to have as much as you can. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we're coming on a lap 97, and we're coming to the start-finish line out of the last corner, which is turn 14. He's coming on the straightaway, and then O'Ward has something go wrong. It has some engine issue, and then Ericsson passes him, and Ericsson just takes the lead, and he goes on to win the race.
Yeah.
Which, James Hinchcliffe and Townsend Bell call him the sneaky Swede for a reason. I mean, he stayed out of trouble. He was there at the end, and he finished first. I mean, I feel like Ericsson's very consistent, and, you know, he led the championship for quite a while last season after the Indianapolis 500. I mean, it's the biggest points-paying race, but, I mean, he was consistent the whole season.
That's going away, by the way.
Yeah, I know it's going away.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you also have Scott Dixon finishing third. So both drivers stayed out of trouble to finish first and third, and Pato O'Ward finishes second, which he talked about how during NBC's interview or after the race that this was probably the best car that they've ever brought to St. Pete, how they've improved a lot. So,
They've never historically been really good in streets of St. Pete. I don't know how many wins they had as a team.
And also, Ganassi, was it like their in like forever at St. Petersburg?
I can't remember them winning.
I thought Dario Franchini won at one point.
He might have won in 09 or 10. Yeah. It's been a while. Yeah, it's been a minute. That's for sure.
He won to win, and Chip Ganassi is extremely happy.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll be, Garrett, do you have the date for the next race for IndyCar?
Yeah, it's. It is in 25 days, 4 hours, a minute, and a second. It's on April 2nd at 12 o'clock on NBC. You have the, it's from Texas. It's the PPG 375.
They always have good races there, too.
They do. But I'll go over the top 27 from the race, as it is the biggest IndyCar field we've had since, like, 2007, around there. So you had Devlin Gianfrancesco finishing in 27th place. Again, he got in that incident. Pagano finished in 26th place. Benjamin Peterson, 25th place. Santino Ferrucci, 24th place. And Elio in 23rd. All of those got tangled up in the first accident.
And losing two of, like, Meyer Shank losing their entire team within the first lap is awful. To start off the season, it's a very unfortunate thing you never want to see. Very expensive week for Meyer Shank.
I mean, you know, you bring in Simon Pagenaud. I was thinking, you know, they would be really competitive once he got to that team and be contending at the front. But, you know, nothing seems to be. I mean, they're not really contending at the front. I mean,
because both they need a younger guy on the team. I think if I'm Elio next year, I step down to Indy only, and that's. You bring in, because I don't think Pagano's out of his prime yet.
No, I think it just has something to do with the equipment, because, you know, he was, you know, flying with, you know, Team Penske. I mean, it's different.
Well, it's completely different, and, you know, you have to look at that. You know, you have Team Penske equipment, top of the line, top notch, whatnot, and you have Meyer Shank Racing, who's probably mid-level equipment.
Well,
they
were doing really well with Jack Harvey at one point. So,
really well is a stretch.
Yeah.
Consistent, yes. But I don't say really well. I'd say, you know, they're a mid-pack team at the end of the day. So, again, they did win that Indianapolis 500. But again, I'm just saying Meyer Shank Racing. This is, I'm not trying to disrespect anyone here, but I think they are, their top is around a mid-level team. I think that's about the best they can do in IndyCar.
They're a higher mid-level team, you could say.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I'd say they're around where Ray Hall is.
They're one of those teams that'll get you consistent points, but isn't going to be like consistently taking podiums and wins.
I'm hoping that turn this around, because Pagano's put a long-term contract. He got paid a lot of money, I mean, to go to Meyer-Shank.
I think Pagano still has the best days ahead of him there.
Yeah,
I just think they
got to get the car. Eventually, things are going to get, hopefully, click and just get the car better. I mean, we have a long season, so I wouldn't, be counting on signing Pagano.
Plus, I mean, their oval setup is a lot better than their road course setup, too, so you have to remember that as well. Because, I mean, I'm sure on the ovals, like, coming to Texas, I think a lot of those, like, I think Meyer-Shank will be a lot faster, and I think Aaron McLaren will be a lot faster as well. But, anyway, in 22nd place, you had Jack Harvey, 21st place, Rinus VK, 20th, Colton Herta, who did hit the wall on one of the laps, brought out a yellow flag. Felix Rosenquist in 19th, so pretty much all those guys until Rosenquist had contact. Joseph Newgarden finished 18th, he also had contact as well. Stingray Rob finished 16th after he had contact the first lap. They got the car back out.
Greatest name in IndyCar, by the way. Just on the grid on WBDG-FM HD1 Indianapolis.
Love Stingray Rob. How could you like not love that name?
It is a good name, and I think, again, for him to finish 16th after the really bad weekend he had, a couple crashes, is a really telling for that kid, so I'm excited to see how he does the rest of the season. 15th was Kyle Kirkwood, also had a contact. Connor Daly finished 14th. In 13th place was Agustin Campiano Juncos Racing. He finished 13th. 13th. On 12th was Marcus Armstrong, who had a pretty impressive 12th place finish. Again, he's getting used to the IndyCar.
He made some mistakes in the race, too.
He did make some mistakes, but to finish 12th in your first IndyCar race is something,
It's solid.
Solid, for sure. In 11th place was Scott McLaughlin. They got the car back out on the track after the contact with Grosjean. In 10th place was David Malukas. In 9th place was Christian Lundgaard. 8th place, Alex Palou. 7th place, Will Power. He had a penalty earlier on in the race.
He started in the back, too, and finishing 7th. He had a good day. Will Power did.
Yep, for sure. And then in 6th place was Graham Rahal. He's a guy that is never going to really get you a win or anything like that, but he's always very consistent in finishing around the top 10. So I expect another
turn it around and he can hopefully get a win. So it's been a while since he's had a win. It was like at the
2017
Duel of Detroit. Won both of them.
Yep. So it has been a minute since Ray Hall has got to victory lane. In 5th place, one of the most impressive performances of the day was Callum Ilott.
Oh, yeah, Juncos Racing.
Mm-hmm. He just was in the right place, right time with all those cautions out. He just kept moving up positions and was able to get a top 5 out of it. Their car looked very nice as well, so it looks like, I wouldn't say championship level or anything like that, but I could see them getting, maybe a podium here or there towards the season. And then in 4th place, Alexander Rossi, who had a quietly really good day. Finished 4th, and again, he's looking for his first championship there. 3rd place was Scott Dixon, who, again, ran a really nice race. Again, Scott Dixon every season, very consistent.
For
sure. And then in 2nd place was Pato O'Ward, who, again, is looking for his first championship as well. Nice start off the season there. Again, he would have liked to get the win, but again, nothing he could do there. He's only 10 points back. So, again, the top 5 are separated by 21 points. So, again, obviously, it's anyone's game to win here.
And Aaron McLaren starting off the season very strong.
Oh, Alexander Rossi had a great finish, too.
Yeah, for sure. Two drivers in the top 5. And then in 1st place was Marcus Ericsson, who, won the race and, again, is looking for his first championship as well.
Thank you, Garrett, for that. We're coming into Texas in a month or so. We'll be in April. Takuma Sato will be back. He'll be racing the ovals for Chip Ganassi Racing, so look for him to be very strong at Texas. I believe Tony Kanaan, is he racing ovals?
I think he's just the 500.
Just 500. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, that sucks. He usually does really well there. You got any picks who you think could win at Texas?
Well, actually, yeah, I think, again, I think the Ganassi is obviously to be strong on the
Scott
ovals.
Yeah, Scott Dixon has the most wins out of the whole field at Texas.
So. And then I think, again, I think the Arrow McLaren cars are going to be really strong, along with the Penske cars.
Oh, yeah, Newgarden and McLaughlin, an epic duel at the on the last lap. Newgarden barely beat McLaughlin to the line.
Correct. And then I'm actually really interested as well to see how the Andretti cars do with the road course setup. Same with Ed Carpenter cars. But if I had a pick right now, I'm going to take Alexander Rossi to get a win at Texas. Again, I think Arrow McLaren, SP's oval program is going to be very strong. So I do expect Rossi to have a very good race. And that's who I'm going to pick. I'm going to pick him or Pato. So I just took Rossi just because... You know, because why not? It'd be nice to see him get back to victory lane again. So I'm going to pick Rossi to win the Texas race.
I have to agree with you, Garrett. I think that it's either going to be Rossi or Ward with that. But you mentioned a Chip Ganassi guy being good, like as a team being good on the ovals. Don't sleep. Maybe this is my bold prediction. And Max had a bold prediction about Daytona and ended up being right about his one that he just threw out there.
That hurt me so much.
Ready? This is also Max's, it was last year's Indy 500 pick, and I believe this year's Indy 500 pick as well, Takuma Sato.
Mm-hmm.
I do like
that pick. Don't count him out on ovals.
I do like that pick. I mean, he's a two-time Indianapolis 500 champion. I mean, you can't really count him out on the ovals. I mean, he knows how to run the ovals. If I'm going to pick somebody to win at Texas, it's either going to be those Team Penske boys. It's going to be either, I'm going to go with either Newgarden or McLaughlin. I think they're going to be really strong there like they were last year. Or give me the Arrow McLaren guys. Pat O'Ward won at Texas before. Give me Alexander Rossi. And then I'll go to the Ganassi guys with Scott Dixon. I feel like, and then Marcus Erickson could be a sleeper there as well. But yeah.
So, but I think with going to the ovals, I think that with road courses, you have a little bit more room for smaller teams to do good. Obviously, we saw like Callum Island have a good day, Kyle Kirkwood as well. But I think that with ovals,
you can't really have that.
Right. Ovals, you have more, it's more of a straight line speed of getting stuff in the turns. So I think that it'll be more of a Ganassi, Penske, Andretti, McLaren day.
Yeah.
I don't know about Andretti. I'm really interested.
Probably not Andretti. I mean, I think they'll be lower, but yeah.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for IndyCar News. Thank you, Garrett, for always your insight. And we're going to take a 30-second break here on Indy's Giant 90.9, your station for Variety. You're listening to the All Gas and No Brakes Race Show. And we're going to come back with Owen Pulley with your Formula One news.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the All Gas and No Brakes Radio Show. I'm your host, Landon Nelson, a.k.a. Big Nelly. We just recapped the IndyCar news with Garrett Burkle. And now we're going to move on to your Formula One news with Owen Pulley, also joining us in the studio, Maxwell Gilley. I'm working on those awards that Owen, you say it because I butchered it last time.
IASB.
Good job. IASB Awards, on-air personality. Let's give a round of applause for Maxwell Gilley, guys.
Appreciate it.
Glad to have you on, man. We were missing you. But Owen, take it away with your Formula 1 news, bud.
So the Bahrain Grand Prix, the first race of the year. Max Verstappen takes it home. What else is new? All right, that's all your Formula 1 news. Max Verstappen wins.
Imagine.
No, but it was a good first race.
Oh, yeah.
It was exciting. 1-2. Yeah,
exciting.
A 1-2 for Red Bull. And Fernando Alonso takes home his 99th podium.
He was flying. And I want to add something about Fernando Alonso. He got hit on the first lap of the race. I believe it was in turn number 4. He got hit at, I might be, you know, butchering the turn, but they're definitely going up some straightaway, and Lance Stroll overdrove the corner and hit his wing. And then that Aston Martin with Fernando Alonso just took over.
I believe it was 3 or 4, yeah.
Yeah, so he took over. I mean, he was flying. I mean, that Aston Martin looked really quick in practice. First practice of the year, he was on top of the charts. I mean, you also have Lance Stroll racing with a broken hand. I mean... I mean, Austin Martin, I mean, had a performance for the ages, one of the best performances in a long time since the racing, since the pink Mercedes Racing Point days.
Back when Checo got the last, the first win.
Oh, yeah.
In the Racing Point in the Secure Grand Prix. I believe it was Secure back then.
Which both Austin Martin split the Mercedes with Alonso finishing third and then Lance Stroll finishing sixth and George Russell finishing seventh. Mercedes really had a down day. They were, winter testing, they didn't look the greatest. Their car's gotten a lot better since then with Lewis Hamilton finishing fifth. But George Russell finishing seventh, there, you have to have some concern there. So, I mean, it was just not a great day for Mercedes whatsoever or Ferrari. I mean,
Ferrari, yeah, the DNF by Leclerc.
And they just weren't
the engine
as,
problem.
And they just weren't as quick compared to the Red Bull. Their tire degradation was just was horrible.
And they've already fitted a new battery for the power unit. They've already done, I forgot what they did another thing. They got rid of like a spec part that, or not a spec part, but you know what I mean? Something that was, that they put in, they were like, oh, we don't like that, so they're going to change it. So Leclerc's already facing possible grid penalties for the next race.
Yeah, it's just not great. I mean, they just did not look as quick as the Red Bulls. They tried everything with strategies and everything, but, you know, these reliability issues cannot keep happening for Ferrari. That's what, you know, kept them out of the championship last year, and also strategic calls by his team, which Binotto's not there. It's Freddie Valser. I feel like he's already doing a better job. I mean, the strategy was a lot better, but just engine failure, just not great. As you know, being team principal of your first race for Ferrari, probably just gives nightmares to Leclerc just of, you know, everything that happened last season.
Yeah, and we had some other guys. So Logan Sargeant got lapped. He was one lap down. The American, the rookie, Kevin Magnussen, a lap down, finished fifth last year at the Bahrain Grand Prix and ended up finishing in 13th. Nick DeVries, a lap down as well in 14th. Nico Hülkenberg, a lap down as well. So both Haases finishing a lap down. Zhou Guanyu, a lap down. And Lando Norris, two laps down.
It was not a great day for McLaren whatsoever, starting in the rear.
And I'm going to tell you right now, in my opinion, that is going to reflect the season a ton. I think it's going to be an awful year for McLaren.
I mean, we haven't even got to Oscar Piastri, but he finished dead last.
Yeah, it was the first DNF of the race.
Yeah, DNF of the race for Oscar Piastri. They were just not quick whatsoever. I mean, you're bringing in Oscar Piastri. You're going to pay him a lot of money. I mean, if that car does not get better and you spend all this money bringing Piastri in, and it is just, you know, you will go with these young guys and then, you know, things just aren't going to get better. I mean, it's just not great for McLaren because you kick out Daniel Ricciardo, experienced driver, had, you know, race wins, and then you bring in Piastri. And if, you know, I don't want to, you know, count on Piastri right now, but if he, you know, just does not, you know, finish in the top 10, score points and be consistent, it's just not going to work out for McLaren whatsoever.
And Nico Hülkenberg had a 15-second penalty that he got for multiple track limit violations, and a guy, he didn't finish, but he had 20 seconds in...
Was it Esteban Ocon?
It was Esteban Ocon, and he had 20 seconds in penalties because he lined up wrong on the grid. There's 5 seconds. Didn't serve his penalty correctly. There's 10 seconds, and was speeding in the pit lane while serving the penalty and got an additional 5 seconds, so 20 seconds in total.
You know, no one talked about this guy enough during the race, but I'd give this guy driver of the day if I could vote twice, because I voted for Fernando Alonso.
And he ended up winning driver of the day.
Yeah, and he finished third on the podium. I mean, I had to. His racecraft was amazing, which we'll get in more to that. But I definitely give it to Pierre Gasly. He started dead last. And he finished ninth in an Alpine, which he looked really strong. And Valtteri Bottas being very consistent, finishing eighth in the Alfa Romeo. That's basically, you know, your top 10. We just talked about it, of the results from the Bahrain Grand Prix. But Fernando Alonso's racecraft.
Real quick, Alex Albon
forgot about him.
Finished for Williams.
Yeah, wow. That. Thank you, Alan. That was an amazing story there. They looked really strong. I mean, you know, they're, you know, usually at the back of the grid because, I mean, they have a, Williams, to be honest, has just not been really good in a really long time, but they're trying to get better. But, you know, he finished 10th, which is absolutely amazing for, Alexander Albon. That's just a great story.
And the AlphaTauri is struggling as well. Oh, like yeah. We said, Yuki Tsunoda 11th and Nick DeVries in 14th.
Yeah. So just not a great day for AlphaTauri. But I'm going to talk about Lonzo's racecraft. He made a pass coming in down, you know, that down that hill after you get out of, you know, turn A, go down the hill in turn 9. He just did a switcheroo on Hamilton going into turn 9 down a hill and comes out in fourth place, and then no, fifth place, I should say. Fourth. Yeah, there we go. Okay. Whew. Math. Not good at math. Anyways, moving on. So he came out fourth, and then, you know, Leclerc has that engine failure, and then he's gonna try the same move on Sainz. It doesn't work. Gets into turn out of turn 10. He goes down that long straight going into turn 11, and Sainz pushing him all the way out to the end of the track, all the way off the track, and he still gets the pass done. Fernando Alonso, absolutely stellar performance from him. 99th podium, it was a great story. Good for Alonso. I'm expecting Aston Martin to be very strong this season. I feel like they could win a race this year, but they're going to score consistent podiums and be a threat with Ferrari and Mercedes all year long.
Yeah, I'm very excited for that. But we will have to see later as the Saudi Arabia or the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix at Jeddah, the Jeddah Street Circuit at night will be March 17th through the 19th, and that's the Friday after this one, the Friday through Sunday next week, so that should be fun to see with the new track. I know they changed some of the corners. There were some blind top speed corners, which are just pretty dangerous for the drivers, that they worked on and extended the track a little bit on the outside, so should be in for some good street racing next weekend. So very excited to see that. Hopefully, honestly, just as a fan, to see some good racing. Hopefully, Alonso could pull off another podium, possibly a race win.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that'd be amazing.
Next podium for Alonso, by the way, would be his 100th career podium.
Yeah. Which I'm not, you know, doubting Alonso. I feel like he can still contend with, you know, these young guys like Carlos Sainz and Verstappen and George Russell and, you know, Sergio Perez is the youngest, but definitely, you know, better equipment than the Aston Martin and Lewis Hamilton, the Mercedes. He can definitely contend with those cars and drivers. And, he's over 40 years old, and he's still, you know, it seems like he's not missed a beat. I mean, he looks like he's young prime Alonso still, with the racecraft and his just overall pace as a driver. I mean, he is a two-time champion, and he has over 20 Grand Prix wins. You can never doubt him going into a Grand Prix. So,
yeah, most definitely. But and just basically, it all boils down to who's going to have the better car. I think that Red Bull's going to have a good season. I think Ferrari could pick it up.
Yeah. George Russell already came out in the media and said that that he doesn't think Red Bull's going to lose a race this year. Which, on my opinion, I mean, they're really strong, but I feel like, I mean, they can't. I mean, that'd be crazy if they won every race in a season. That'd be absolutely insane. But I don't think that'll happen. But they're going to win almost every race this season. I agree that Red Bull car is extremely strong. Adrian Newey doing a fantastic job, like always, designing the car, and Well, that's going to wrap it up for your Formula 1 news. We're going to take a 30-second break here on Indy's Giant 90.9, your station for variety. We're going to come back with your NASCAR news with Maxwell Gilley and Big Nelly. This is the All Gas and No Brakes Radio Show. We'll be back in 30 seconds, ladies and gentlemen.
What kind of help does the IRS have for identity theft victims?
If you suspect you're a victim of tax-related identity theft, go to irs.gov/identity theft to learn how to prevent potential refund fraud and protect your tax account. At the IRS, combating tax-related identity theft is a top priority, and we are committed to prevention, detection, and assisting victims. And we're working with law enforcement to catch the criminals. For more info, go to irs.gov/identity theft to learn what the IRS is doing to help protect you.
Welcome back to the All Gas and No Brakes Radio Show. I'm your host, Landon Nelson, a.k.a. Big Nelly, and I'm joined alongside by Maxwell Gilley. I'm glad to have you here, Max.
Excited to be here.
Well, let's go over the NASCAR news. Kyle Busch won the truck race at Las Vegas Motor Speedway on March 3rd. I mean, I wouldn't count out, you know, Kyle Busch in a truck series race. He's the winningest driver in NASCAR history across all three series. So, I mean, and he's driving his own equipment. He's a two-time, you know, NASCAR Cup Series champion. So, I mean, nothing much there. So, moving on to the NASCAR Xfinity Series, Austin Hill wins at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. That's two wins for Austin Hill. I'm pretty sure two wins, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Austin Hill, I mean, I feel like he's gotten a lot better since his first year at Richard Childress. I mean, he won most at restrictor plates last season, Atlanta and Daytona, two wins there. It was very consistent, but getting a win on the oval always feels good if you're Austin Hill. Max, any thoughts?
So the biggest thing for Austin Hill, it is very early in the season, but he is obviously the driver to beat. He only led 19 laps total. He wins stage two, so he's smart with the points racing as well, doing good in stage third place in stage one. But he passed on the last lap.
Justin Allgaier. Yeah.
Yeah, and Chandler Smith, by the way, dominating the day.
Yeah, I didn't really watch that race. Sorry, Max, if I didn't have my information ready. But, Chandler Smith, Justin Allgaier up there. But, you know, Austin Hill buying his time and just, I mean, kind of being like the sneaky Swede, like Marcus Ericsson, just, you know, staying out of trouble and, you know, coming away with the win at Las Vegas in the Xfinity Series.
So, three races in it to the season, Austin Hill has a 21-point advantage in the points series. He's obviously made the playoffs now with his two wins. He is the driver to beat. And real quickly, before we cover the Cup Series, because it was a crazy race there, we have to talk about Chase Elliott. Chase Elliott getting a snowboarding accident Friday in Colorado. He missed the Vegas race. He's expected to miss six races.
Six weeks.
Yep, and if everything goes right, the return would be April 23rd at Talladega, but you're going to see Jordan Taylor driving Coda, and for the other five remaining races, it will be Josh Berry.
Yeah, he had a tibia. He hurt his tibia in Colorado snowboarding. But there were some talks about this waiver, the NASCAR. You know, this takes you back to 2015 with Kyle Busch. You know how he broke his leg, and they were, you know, I mean, they gave him a waiver, but they're just talking about that. I mean, you got to give him a waiver. You got to give Chase Elliott a waiver to come back. I mean, he's the most popular driver. Fans love him. And I mean, you know, you just have to do that.
I disagreed with when Kyle Busch got it because he didn't do the full season. I'll still disagree that Chase Elliott. Listen, I want you to make every single race in order to make it to the playoffs. I still hate the way the point system works because the regular season doesn't matter truly until the championship weekend. So, I mean, he's going to get the waiver. Even if that wouldn't happen with Kyle Busch, there's no way that NASCAR wasn't going to get Chase Elliott to get in the playoffs. That would be such a massive PR hit for them.
Yeah, and the thing is, I mean, if he's, you know, below 30th in points, he can't make the playoffs. He's not playoff eligible. So, I mean, you know, agree or disagree, I mean, he gets the waiver, and, you know, let's say he just does not. I mean, he struggles most of the season. I mean, he's below 30th in points, which that could happen. You never know. So, you know, we'll see how Chase Elliott does. But like you said about Josh Berry, drives for Junior Motorsports in the NASCAR Xfinity Series, 32 years old from Hendersville, Tennessee. A big late model, short track guy, really good on the late models. He has five wins in his NASCAR Xfinity Series career, 36 top tens and one pole. So what are your expectations for Josh Berry in the 9 car?
I expect him to get better and better each week. I would love to see him make the Cup Series one day. Josh Berry, great story, great driver. Do I expect him to be a contender? No. He needs to get some top 20s. If he can get a top 10 in any of the races, I would say that is a really good day. Yes, it's great equipment with Hendrick Motorsports, but is a very inexperienced guy. He doesn't have all that Cup Series experience. And you can have great equipment, but if you don't know how to race it, you're not going to do well.
Agreed. I'm excited for Jordan Taylor to get this shot to race the 9 car at the Circuit of the Americas. A big IMSA guy, very successful in IMSA. He has 24 wins, 49 podiums, 15 poles, and 2 championships. He's also a 24 Hours of Daytona win. He's won 12 Hours of Sebring. And, you know, he's also won the 24 Hours of Le Mans. He won that in the GT Pro class in 2015, and he won the 24 Hours of Daytona in 2017, and then the 12 Hours of Sebring in 2017. I mean, he's very... He also won in 2019 the 24 Hours of Daytona. I mean, Jordan Taylor is a very successful driver when it comes to IMSA, and his brother and father are in IMSA as well. Wayne Taylor Andretti Racing now is what they call it. They have an IMSA team, and then Ricky Taylor, his brother, races. So I mean, his bloodline is through IMSA and sports car championships. I mean, I feel like, you know, Jordan Taylor is going to do big things. Max, what are your thoughts?
Of any of the guys who ever try and do the road courses in NASCAR come in front of the series, he's the guy who I would predict to be truly one of the major contenders of any of the guys who have the one-offs. He is really talented.
And he's also working with that new Le Mans car for NASCAR.
Garage 56.
Thank you, Max. Appreciate you. Man, I don't know what I'd do without you, buddy. Garage 56 working with Jimmy Johnson. Forgot the one guy's name, but he's a German, you know. He's like Jordan Taylor. He's from Germany. He does the sports car stuff, but Jensen Button's also part of that. So he's part of Garage 56 working alongside. And Jordan Taylor's personality, if you ever went to his Instagram account, is hilarious. I mean, he has like this alternate personality where he's like a 90s NASCAR fan. He's wearing the DuPont Rainbow Warriors jacket and walks around. It's just hilarious. So good news there that, you know, good news there for Jordan Taylor. And, you know, hopefully he does really successful for Hendrick Motorsports driving the number 9 machine. Max, what else you got for us, buddy?
Real quickly, as we end this week's edition, we got to talk about the Cup Series race, of course. William Byron, dominant, led 176 laps, win stage one, win stage two, wins Carter the B. race. At 24 is very impressive. Usually at the start of the season, my biggest thing for William Byron, I need to see consistency, especially as we get later in the season. But Kyle Busch was originally leading with 4 laps to go. They have to go in overtime. William Byron starts second, overtakes Martin Truex Jr. Martin Truex Jr. just absolutely falling back.
Yeah, he didn't come into the pits and stayed out on, you know, worn out tires. He just could not keep up with that 24. And then William Byron won the race off pit road in the final pit stop to beat Kyle Larson off the line. I mean, Picker didn't do the greatest job for Kyle Larson, and in my opinion, it cost him a win. So, but William Byron did have the car to beat, but once Byron got back in traffic, Larson's car came to life because, you know, William Byron, his car was not used to being in traffic in dirty air because he was up front all day long.
I mean, when we look at the Kyle Larson machine, he's just been dominant since he joined Hendrick. He won the first championship, got out a bit early in the playoffs, but still, I think he is going to be a major contender still for the title. He doesn't have the wins yet. He's not going to have that amazing season he had a couple seasons ago where he nearly wins every single race, but I can tell you this, he's going to be one to watch out for.
Agreed.
As we get to November.
You can't count out Kyle Larson. I mean, he's really good at Las Vegas. He talked about that track being sort of like a dirt track. You know, trying to, you know, because on a dirt track, you're trying to find the groove, you know, searching around for, you know, where you're fastest at, where the grip is. Because Las Vegas sort of is like that. The high side, the low side, the middle side. You had guys running all over the track. It's kind of like Homestead, too, because you have guys running all the way down the bottom. And you have Kyle Larson, Tyler Reddick barely hitting the wall. They're all the way up on the outside line, just zooming across the track. So, I definitely agree with you, Max, with Kyle Larson being a threat for the championship. And it's just unfortunate he didn't get the win there. But William Byron definitely dominated that race and was the class of the field. Saturday, March 11th. The NASCAR Xfinity Series will be at Phoenix Raceway on Fox Sports 1. They'll be airing at 4:30 p.m. And then on Sunday, March 12th at 3:30 p.m., the NASCAR Cup Series will be on Fox at Phoenix Raceway. So tune into that if you're, you know, want to watch some NASCAR. It should be a great race at Phoenix Raceway. And you know what? I'm hoping Kevin Harvick can get a win here at Phoenix. He has the most, he has 9 wins at Phoenix Raceway, which is, that's the most wins by any driver at Phoenix, and he's, you know, it's just one of those tracks he's really good at. He's been good at for years. But switching over, the Ford manufacturer just hasn't had the same success when he was driving for Stuart Haas and the Chevrolet there. I don't know why. It's just never, things just haven't been clicking. And then, yeah, Stuart Haas did have a very disappointing day at Las Vegas. Kevin Harvick finished 9th. I think, you know, Eric Almirola was, you know, was in the, he was in the top 15, top 20s. I think he had 2 guys lapped down with Chase Briscoe and Ryan Preece. That's it, ladies and gentlemen, for the All Gas and No Brakes radio show. I want to thank Owen Poley, Garrett Burkle, and Maxwell Gilley for being on the show today. Couldn't do it without them. And that's going to wrap it up for today's episode.